I got a fountain on I can hear in the background. One sec.
Fountain.
You know, a cat water fountain.
It's like, what are you fountain?
He's a cat water fountain. You got to have it. You got to have it.
You can't just not fountain water your cats.
Butterscotch
Shenanigans. Hey, everybody. Welcome to episode 307 of Coffee with Butterscotch, the game dev comedy podcast, Butterscotch Shenanigans. I'm Seth, and I'm the games programmer.
I'm Adam, and my microphone is floating.
I'm Sam, and I'm holding mine with my hand.
And this is a show where we talk about life, business, and working in the games industry. Today's April 15th, 2021. Dunk on everyone. Before we get started, we have a warning. We're gonna be shooting profanity like a cannon on this show. We'd also like to thank our supporters over at moneygrab.bscotch.net. We got a bunch of recurring supporters who are just hurling money at us, you know, monthly, and we love it.
Guys,
more,
just the best.
More, yeah. Please.
Yes.
Money, please.
Money, please.
All right. Let's talk about, well, first of all, this is a prime number episode. We just got to get that out of the way because it's important.
It's a thing we do. We don't know why, but it is a thing. We're going to keep doing it.
Primes are special. You got to treat them with respect. Respect the prime, and the prime will respect you.
You can use them to encrypt things somehow. Did you know that? I don't know how,
yeah,
but the thing you can do.
But you
can.
It's important. Yeah. You're going to use an even number to encrypt something? Get the fuck out of here.
That doesn't make sense. Somebody needs to go.
Unless it's two, because that's a prime, and then you're good to go. But other than that, get out of here.
I want
to
see somebody develop a encryption mechanism that uses the prime numbered podcast episode numbers of this podcast. So,
ooh.
I don't know what that means, but that's why I asked somebody else to do it.
You know, I also heard that if you optimize primes, then they turn into semi-trucks.
It's true.
Optimize primes. You know what I mean?
Yeah. If you optimize primes, yeah. Mm-hmm. I can pick it up. Let's talk about the quarterly review, which we did. It has been, it's been a quarter. We're starting quarter two of 2021. And as longtime listeners of our podcast will know, we do quarterly reviews, at which point we sort of like a family member playing Monopoly, just kind of flip the board over and stomp out of the room. It's important to kind of take a look at what we've been doing and decide what to keep, what not to keep, what to change, and, sometimes just sort of overhauling everything, right? Mm-hmm. So this quarter, we started with a prompt. We wanted to look at it through the lens of time, which is to say, where's our time going? What are we doing? What are we even doing? Because it's really easy to focus on what you're doing. And not how much of it you're doing or when you're doing it, right?
Right.
Yep. And we kind of thought about it from even like a one step further back, which is to think about it from this interesting perspective of compounding actions. Everything that you do builds on everything that you have done.
That's what makes it interesting.
It's interesting.
Right. Yeah.
And just to kind of like demonstrate how potent this is, I was coming up with a prompt and kind of like pitching the idea of this compounding actions thing to Adam and Sam to kick off the quarterly review. And I was like, let's say you could earn a 1% interest per week and you threw $100 in there. How much money do you have after 40 years? $95 billion. it's ridiculous. It's a crazy amount.
Let's convert that right into work terms. Let's say you had 35 hours per week.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right. And then every week you get 1% more
out of those 35 hours,
right?
Because you're doing things a little better, you're getting better tech or whatever. Yeah.
Then how many hours is 35 hours? You know what I mean?
40 years from now.
40 years from now.
Yeah,
it's billions of hours. Yeah. So you're able to do so much more because of all the things that you've done, but only if the things that you've done are the things that enable you to do more, right? So if you're just on the grind, just doing everything by hand, not making improvements, not trying to get that little percentage point of improvement each week, then this week it doesn't matter. A month from now it doesn't matter. A year from now it starts to matter a bit. Mm-hmm. 10 years from now, it matters a lot, right? And then it just keeps getting the gap in what's possible in the future keeps getting bigger and bigger if you don't retain that focus on making sure that you're optimizing your time well and focusing on these little improvements all the time.
I think that's part of the reason why. Go ahead.
The sort of counter framing on this is that progress is slow, right?
Yes.
And that doesn't make it small, right? Because like small, like progress is incremental. It takes place in tiny little bits and like little tiny little stops and starts over time. But it behaves like compound interest. It just keeps on growing. And it grows in a way that you don't actually see it happen, except if you zoom out on the time scale. And then, because even with compound interest, when it's like, oh yeah, because in some day it's, you know, $40 billion, right? It's like, yeah, that's true. But at that moment in time, it's still increasing by 1%, right? So if you were to look at that $40 billion that week, you'd be like, nothing's even changing.
It's the same.
It's the same, except you just added, you know, half a billion more dollars, right?
Right.
But relatively, you actually don't see it happen because simultaneously growth is slow and also, but also extremely large in the long run, and it works very counter to the fact that as humans, we are really good at identifying patterns in the short term and very bad at it in the long term. And that's why it's so fucking aggravating to make slow progress. But that's actually an extremely powerful way to, if you can have diligence and maintain a really small change, you know, like a very small one, the net outcome, even when you can't see it over time,
it's wild.
It's huge.
It's absolutely wild. And I think this was especially important to think about in light of the state of the world right now, which is we live in a world where the human mind's inability to understand exponential growth has really changed a lot of our lives. Because people just say, well, you know, I probably won't get sick. And then they go out partying and whatever, and suddenly they become a plague vector, and now 200 more people are sick, and then those people's each make 200 more people sick, and now suddenly, you know, it's out of control.
Yep.
And I especially remember at the beginning of the pandemic when like one person in Chicago got COVID, and that was news, right? Yep. People are like, oh, somebody in Chicago got it. Oh no. And then of course the media response is like, yeah, but like it's one person. I mean, it's just one.
Yep. You know? that's a good point. It's actually sort of, we've just lived through the horrifying real world example of this, which I think that the way to think about it. So if you think about doubling, like I think when you think about exponential increase and stuff, doubling is like the easiest one to kind of mentally think about, right? And my favorite example of this that helps explain it is say you have like a lily pad in a pond, right? And there's just one to start with, and it doubles every day, right? The point is that the pond is not completely filled, or is only half filled with lily pads the day before it is completely filled. Right? So it's one of those things where you're like, it goes from being like, this is fine, to being like,
so we still got half a pond left. You're like, oh no.
Oh, it's gone.
Oh, there's nowhere to swim or fish or whatever we do with ponds.
Initially, you know, these prompts and stuff that we've been coming up with came out of asking a similar sort of time question about the quarterlies, which was, hey, you know, we have these meetings every 3 months. Is there a way that we can get a little more juice out of them rather than just going through the usual procedural stuff, which has been handy, but like there's probably some additional meat, you know, in there that if we can figure out a way to kind of get at and take the time, then we might be able to unlock some new things, which I think honestly came directly. Like if we didn't do that prompt that you did, Seth, like I don't think we'd be doing what we're doing right now.
Well, we'd be doing something else.
Something else.
Something else. Kind of cool, but we would do something else. But yeah, I think in thinking about our time in that way, which is that like every little decision builds over time, and every procedure, every process, every decision we make. So if this week we decide to focus, you know, more on this one particular tool, that's going to change what happens next week, right? Because we have this new tool, and that's going to change everything just keeps building, right? And so being very deliberate about where our priorities go, where our time goes, and how we use it, makes it so that even by still just working a regular, you know, 40-hour work week, not crunching, blah, 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 not expanding the team, we just continually gain more and more capabilities to the point where if we're able to last for a long time, then it just becomes ridiculous. So that did force us to just take a step back and be like, what is time? You know, what are we doing with a day or a week?
How did you put it? It's the office space question. What would you say you do here? And then there was the follow up philosophical question. What is doing, or something like that?
What would you say doing is?
Yep.
So we all just plotted out our weeks, and it's just like, just to your best guess, because we haven't been tracking our time and stuff, right? So it's like to the best of your recollection, which is already kind of flawed, but it's interesting. To the best of your recollection, where does your time go every week by hour? And then let's break that down into percentage and kind of see, you know, where that's going. And is that what you thought? Is that what you hoped? Is that what you think it should be? And after sort of digging through all that, we made a whole bunch of changes. Mm-hmm. The biggest one being taking a step back and looking at the fact that we're now working from home, and we have been for a year, but we had still been working 9 to 5 because when we had an office, people have to drive. There's a commute. We got to get there. And when you're at the office, you kind of, you can't really do
anything. That's where you are now.
That's where you are now. Yeah. So if you did want to say like go for a run or something, it's kind of an inconvenient location to do it, mm-hmm. right? So you're just not going to. So the 9 to 5 sort of packing the workday into one chunk approach is actually optimized for a commute and for having people be concentrated in one sort of suboptimal place that's like equally bad for everyone, you know? Yep. So we got to get in here, get our work done, and leave. And so we opened up the option for ourselves and everybody else in the studio to customize their workday. Just when do you want to start working? When do you want to stop working? And when do you want to take breaks?
And this came directly out of Adam a few weeks ago, just being like, I'm going to take that 2 hour lunch break. Like, I'm going to do this long block in the middle where I'm not doing stuff because I'm
just work an hour later than everybody else.
Cause it just works better for me. And the thing is like Seth and I both were, I mean, I was sort of just paying attention to how Adam was doing sort of like in the vague understanding of how I see that. And the dude just seemed happier and was.
Oh, also, he's just vibing. Just
vibing and also getting more done. And I was like, well, obviously we're doing something wrong.
And it was that the fact that over the lunch break, for the first week in particular, because I kept on having these revelations, you know, because this is the first like, and then my wife takes the same time off. And so now all of a sudden, like, but my wife and I knew when the two of us would be able to like spend a couple hours doing things. Hanging out, doing chores, whatever, right? And previously, it was this like mad scramble at the end of the day for me to get done because my wife gets done with her day earlier, so that we could start in this little more nebulous thing where there kind of was a deadline that I needed to make sure I got to, you know. But it just was just a worse thing that was still kind of unpredictable. And now all of a sudden, it's predictable and it's a 2 hour chunk because instead of the normal lunch time where I would be like, I would consider it a break. Like a work break, as in not, I'm not doing other things now, you know, sort of like a snack break at work. It's like,
but you're still on the clock.
I'm still in the 9 to 5, right?
It's 9 to 5. We've allocated that 8 hour period. It's like, that's work time.
Right. Mm-hmm. So my lunch break is, you know, it's really tight. I'm still thinking a lot about work stuff and I have this pressure to push me back into my chair to get back to doing whatever that means. Right. And so then all of a sudden, like during that first week, that I was doing this, it was like on day one, I saw a bunch of like things around the house that had needed to get done for months. And I just did those things, you know, they were done now. On day two, I got groceries in the middle of the day. Usually we have to wait till the fucking weekend to do that. You know, I just went and got groceries, you know, after making and eating lunch with my wife, I went out and got groceries, you know, another day went out, bought a mm-hmm. cup of coffee from a place, you know. And then the whole time along this, I'm like hanging out with the cats, talking to my wife. And like she and I are making all kinds of plans and talking about things, you know.
Well, it's interesting because two hours is not – it's enough time to do a lot, but it's not enough time to do a lot of other things, you know. Mm-hmm. And it's – you're in active mode because it's the middle of the day. You've been working. The sun's up. You're up and about.
Yeah, all their businesses are open, so you can take care of chores right. and business.
So you have enough time to go get groceries. You got enough time to clean some stuff in the house, blah blah blah. But since you're planning on going back to work and you're still in a limited time window, then it is sort of like taking care of odds and ends time, so that you don't have those things piling up in as a stressor. You know,
it's reducing anxiety, providing like that social thing, making me know that I'm fulfilling all my responsibilities to my wife and to the household and to the cats. You know, all of that stuff, and then I get to get back to work, and all of a sudden, like that anxiety pressure is just dramatically reduced. I probably spent some time outside, did a lot of weed pulling. You know, just like mm-hmm. going outside with a cup of coffee, pulling weeds, looking at the sun. You know, not directly, but
I think the general point here is that it's simply that an hour is not an hour all the time in terms of what you're able to accomplish, right? It just isn't, depending on the time of day, depending on that day for you, what you got going on.
Yeah, depending on the seasons, right? Because, like, probably what's going to happen is that once, assuming that we stick to this and it works and all of that, and we figure out kind of the constraints about how much overlap we actually need people to have and all of that. But probably as the seasons go on, I'm going to be adapting my schedule to the season, you know? Yeah. Because during the seasons, you can do different stuff outside at different times, and it's light or dark outside at different times. And if you can adjust your work day for whatever you need, because I know, like, during the winter, I get bummed as hell, right? Because of what the sun is doing. Like, I wonder what it's going to look like next winter when I can, like, see what's happening and then be like, let me try, like, fucking around this way with my day, you know? Mm-hmm. Maybe I need to work at night in the winter. I don't know what's going to happen, you know? But, like, you know, having that flexibility to – and that was the thing we were talking about, right? It's like going to a workplace is the most artificial structure, right? Because it says, just like Seth said, you find the place that sucks for everybody, right? And you go there now, right? That's what
sucks the least, is, right? But ideally as equally as possible.
As equally as possible, right? But that's also what the workday is, right?
Time that sucks the least.
It's the time that sucks the least for everybody. And it's because societally we've all kind of agreed that that's a work day, and so things are structured around that. So if you use that same chunk of time for that same purpose, then supposedly all other things are available to you. But that's not actually how it works, though, because if everybody's working at that same time and you need to interact with other businesses in a way that isn't business to business, like me as a person, I need to go to the bank or I need to get my hair cut or whatever, right? If your work hours are the same as their work hours, like
– they can't.
That's not how it works.
I mean, you know, we talked a lot about in the past podcasts about designing your work, designing your life. And it's really important to know, again, how arbitrary everything is. And just for clear, the 40-hour work week was just made up by some guy. A part of his nice slogan. It was 8 hours of leisure, 8 hours of work, 8 hours of sleep. That's how it's supposed to be.
Well, also it's probably that, you know, that's about how low unions were able to negotiate it down to
at the 50s. 100%. So it says nothing. It's not – none of this has been designed actually to optimize human performance. And I think it's basically the note. And so what we're trying to do
actually,
now –
it's the most hours that businesses have been able to get away with having from people.
Yes.
That's actually what the work days are designed around. It's not around work.
Yeah. So what we asked the question was just, okay, so, you know, what might happen if it's the case that we let everybody flex their schedules? Because what we've seen from Adam is basically both a happier person and higher productivity, actually, right? And we didn't have to – I mean, he's not working more. We don't have to do anything. In fact, it's just sort of like everything's just better, which is one of those – this is one of those dumb things, right? Which is
– Well, I actually am working a little more too. I'm working better and more because I'm less stressed and I'm enjoying the work more. And so like taking that extra half hour at the end of the workday – I mean, this is also part of like my redesign with my wife, because a lot of what was happening was I wanted to keep working because I was in the flow state when 5 p.m. hit, right? And then part of our workday, which we've also redesigned, was that at 5 p.m. we have stand down. So now all of a sudden like my flow gets interrupted, and now I'm like on a clock to get downstairs to help my wife make dinner and like do all that stuff, right?
It's just crazy.
So right. Once we got
and you can't get back into it by like 6 p.m. now after all that happened.
Well, no, because now it's like now feed the cats, like have dinner, hang out with my wife, do all that stuff, and now we're talking like an hour and a half of time pressured chaos at the end of the day. Like, yeah, I'm not coming back to work after that. That's never going to happen. Yeah. So it was actually the case that immediately after that, I was working night, and it's not about me working more exactly. It's that I was working as much as I wanted to, which was more.
If you had something you were pumped about, then you were
able to just keep going. And if I did it, then I didn't work more. That was fine too, right? But but every hour that wasn't those extra hours was also just better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, but as a result here is that we asked everybody what their schedules, what's your actual ideal schedule? And we just said, we want 7 of your hours. 7, again, it's somewhat arbitrary because we don't know. Like I went and read a bunch of research on this basically the night after we did all the quarterly review stuff and made all these decisions. And it looks like it's probably – my guess is that like work hours is probably something kind of like sleep hours, where it's like for any given person, there's sort of like a window, and it's probably somewhere between 6 and like 8 of like good focused hours.
Probably 6 and 10. Well, yeah, I guess depending on what exactly you mean by like a good focused hour, given that – the kind of work we all have to do doesn't just consist of the stuff we need to be hyper-focused on and all of that. Mm-hmm. And because there's the other stuff that you could just like kind of get done that also needs to get done.
So I'd say like – so this week is the Games Industry Live event, which we'll talk a little bit about later. But it's an online conference. And so I've had a bunch of meetings sort of in the mornings, right? So So 5 p.m. comes around, and I've been able to do quite a bit of programming, but also I've had quite a few sort of like task switching and administrative stuff, mm-hmm. planning these meetings and taking notes and stuff. And so on a day like that, I'm going to have fewer good hours overall because I just, you know, I got to be done, right?
Yeah.
But if I have a day where I've been able to sort of block out just straight programming time where I just can be in the zone, I could get 12 hours out of that mm-hmm. and be fine at the end, you know? So it really kind of depends on who it is and what they're doing and all of that stuff. But
yeah, my favorite
you got to respect it.
Yeah. My favorite thing about this though, is that like when you ask people what their actual ideal hours are, it basically was only the case that I think just for one person on the team that the 9 to 5 was there like, yeah, that's like what I would do mm-hmm. a 9 to 5, which again, we're only a team of 6 people. But if you think about the idea of maybe it's the case that you can get, I don't know, like 10% more out of someone in any given day, and they can be happier by adjusting the schedule a tiny bit. Yeah, right?
You make their life better, make their work better, and then make the team dynamic. Like everything gets better for both the company and the person.
Yeah.
When the same number of hours are going in, just at a slightly different
time. It totally reminds me of when I was in my GDC talk talking about DevOps. Mm-hmm. And we were talking about the art pipeline, right? Which was like what we were doing in the studio was like Sam would make art and then he would send it to me. I would check it for errors and then send it back and then he would rework it, right? And all we did was – so we took the same activities and we just said, okay, now Sam is checking for errors, right? And suddenly we're able to produce and implement twice as much art. We're doing all of the same stuff. We just moved one thing from one person to another and doubled the whole team's output. It's like one of those like logic puzzles where you've got a goat and a cabbage and a sheep and you're trying to cross the river, you know, and like if you just get things arranged in the right way, mm-hmm. then you end up with all of them still alive at the end.
One of those hilarious things, right? Because we're always looking for like these enormous things where it's just like, oh, like we need to hire somebody or like form a new team or bring in a consultant or do like – there's all these things that you always feel like you need to do as a business or just as a person, you know, mm-hmm. doing your life when – often it's just that it's looking at the way that a particular process is being done and asking, how can I just shake this up a bit, right? Is there something I can take away, something I can add, something I can move, something I can put on somebody else, whatever, right? And then figuring out like ending up in the end with the same or similar amount of work.
And same activities even.
Same activities. But just by doing a little shuffle – actually, we had this happen with our QA pipeline as well. With how things go from our external, I guess a pseudo external part-time QA into our full-time QA, who's on staff, Jordan, and then on to Seth. And like realizing that Seth was actually spending a lot of the time evaluating whether or not stuff was sufficiently detailed so that he could figure out what to do with it. And then just realizing actually Jordan could spend that time.
Yep. Right? Just move it.
Just the same thing. Just move it. And then all of a sudden like that changed everything. It's going to free up a huge amount of assess time. It's going to make Jordan much better at his job and make him actually have more fun and like all this.
And then he'll be able to give better feedback to the rest of the QA team because I was too strapped for time, right? So yeah. I wasn't doing a good job of that. So now they'll get better. And now all of a sudden you're able to do – again, you get twice the quality or speed or whatever.
Yeah. When the net result is actually the same amount of work is being done.
So it's kind of just that you know, that thing that we're always harping on about how structure is culture, right? Like how things happen, how people feel about things, why people do things is so influenced by just the structures that people are operating inside of. So it might mean that starting your work day at 8:30 suddenly changes everything for you because now you're packing all your administrative stuff in the first half hour before everybody shows up, and then you're a lot less stressed and you're able to focus more on your work through the day, and you can get everything done faster and better and be happier and less exhausted. But it's even
that realization, right? that if you can have a flexible schedule, right, that now all of a sudden you can make that choice where if there's – because now you can plan around stuff, right? So what the only thing we've set in stone so currently for our work day is the 9 a.m. stand up and project management stuff. So everyone's got to be there for that. But after that, it's allowed to wiggle kind of a lot. It's not wiggling too much yet, right? But yeah, at 9, everyone's there. I know I lost my train of thought on the topic. It's gone.
Well, I think what makes this kind of tricky is the flexibility, and so that's where tooling comes in. So
to finish it up. The
point. I knew where you were going.
Yeah, with that flexibility, that allows you to make a decision, right? Where now Seth can say, for example, I always feel like, you know, I get in here at 9 and I start stuff, and I just feel like the day is too frantic because I didn't get the chance to do administrative stuff first, right? And our response to that as a CEO could be to say, okay, well, let's actually have the first 15 minutes of the day, of, you know, starting at 9, be, okay, everybody, go do your administrative stuff so that we're all kind of on the same page when that starts. Except what if I don't need that, right?
Yeah. Or what if I need a nap? Because what I like to do to start my day is actually take literally an hour. Just have a cup of coffee, eat some toast, and just really like get to inbox zero on everything, evaluate all my tasks, really just like think about what I'm going to be doing today and get it all laid out.
Yep.
Right. And I like to take my time with it so that I don't feel like I have like 6 Chrome tabs open. And, you know, as an ADHD person, having a crunched time to make a bunch of urgent decisions about priorities is like a nightmare scenario.
Now all of a sudden, because this is the trap that we had fallen into, that everybody falls into, is that we kept on trying to adjust the common
the whole thing.
Right. Because like on Mondays, we would get together and we would say, Monday is our production meeting day. So it's a big thing where we figure out what are all the projects, what are some new things we might need to talk about, where's everybody at, what'd you get done last week, what's on the horizon of things we need to be worried about, all that stuff, right? And so like Monday morning 9 a.m. hits and we're like, well, we need to make sure everybody has time, you know, to like organize their shit so that they're ready to talk about this. And so we just say, okay, so we have a 9 a.m. stand-up. Everybody says hi, talk about the weekend briefly. And then we say, okay, cool. We'll just meet back once everybody's done organizing, right? And so give us a little thumbs up, you know, in Discord. And then once the last person goes, then we go. And fortunately, recently, that's actually been very fast. And so this hasn't been too big of a deal.
But there's still a time crunch, right?
There's a time crunch and a waiting time, right? Because whoever gets done first is now waiting for an unknown but small amount of time, like up to 30 minutes, right?
Right.
It's like just big enough to be costly, but just small enough.
You can't do anything
because you're about to get interrupted at a random time. And now all of a sudden you can say, okay, well, since what everybody needs there is a variable, let's find the point that has to be or that can be fixed, right? And then let people adjust around it based on how they need to do things in their own schedules. Because like that was, to me, that was the big realization, is that so much of the difficulty of scheduling and making things work is the fact that everybody has different needs leading into some sort of a common event. And the end result is a lot of waste. A lot of somebody waiting.
So I want to talk about how this also ties then into X.AI. Mm-hmm. Okay. So what we kind of found was that once we said, okay, what if everybody could just pick their work day? Just pick which 7 hours of the day you want to work and what chunks those are in, and you know. And of course there's a next level question there, which is, well, how the fuck do we know when things are happening? How do I know like when Sam's available to collaborate on Crashlands? How do I know? And the answer is I shouldn't have to know that.
How do we make
knowing things is expensive.
Yep.
Right.
And also makes it so you wouldn't have flexibility anymore. So for example, like if you want true flexibility where it's like on a day-to-day basis, yeah, you have your schedule, but maybe today I'm like, you know what? I'm feeling like I'm up early. I'm like ready to rock and roll. I'm actually going to be here from 8 to 1 and then I'm gonna take a little break. And then from 2 to 5, maybe 2 to 4, I'm gonna be done. You know?
So how do you communicate that to everybody? Maybe to take a step back, maybe we should ask, why should you have to communicate that to everybody, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. Because your tools suck. That's why. So we went through and we looked at our calendars and we looked at through Google Calendar and this tool called X.AI. And so you can link this X.AI tool to your Google Calendar, and it's a smart scheduler. So all it does is basically just say block out your calendar by default so that it matches, you know, what your new work day is. And then just use this X.AI smart scheduler. So I can just say, hey, Sam, we need to have a meeting tomorrow. And I don't have to know when tomorrow or whatever. I just click this thing in X.AI, and X.AI will just say, all right, you guys, here's when you're meeting. Mm-hmm. That's it. It finds the best open time that we both have, and it just makes it. So
also, if anybody knows of any like particularly good version of this service, so actually, yeah, so far we're liking, but we didn't do a deep search to find out. So shout out to Ava Carr at glitch.mn, because I set up a meeting with her to talk about some stuff. She's an old buddy of ours we met a million years ago at some GDC or something. And
in the before times.
In the before times. And she's super busy doing all kinds of really cool stuff. And so she replied back and was like, oh, hey, yeah, just like grab a time. And she sent me a link to this x.ai thing. And I was like, the hell is this? and I went into it and it was just like, and then it just like, because I wasn't in that system yet, so then it couldn't do it for me, right? But I wasn't in that system. But it told me that it could do it for me if I was just in the system. And I was like, oh, okay, this is interesting.
Let me get in there.
So I got in there, and then it just – suddenly there was now a time on my calendar that worked for her and worked for me. And like, and it just was there now. And I was like
– yeah, but here's okay. The crazy part.
Yeah, I want to get into this.
The crazy part about – and again, structure. Like structure informs what you do and how you think, right? And so one of the complaints that I had in the quarterly was like, I'm not protecting development time enough. I'm not making sure that I'm putting as much time into Crashen's 2 dev as possible. And I'm letting administrative stuff and meetings and whatever creep into that time. So now that we're using a smart scheduler, I know that if somebody wants to meet with me, then it's going to find open spots on my calendar. Mm-hmm. Okay.
So you can just close some spots.
So what this encourages me to do is to really block out my time and say, these 4 hours are when I'm working on Crashlands 2. Nothing else can happen at that time. And now suddenly I'm protecting my time because there's a structure that makes me do it, right? Mm-hmm. And so suddenly it's going to be easier to schedule stuff. It's going to be easier to collaborate, and you don't have to think so hard about when people are around, even though our workday is more flexible. And people can protect the time that they need to protect because they have to. So all of a sudden, it's like all these little puzzle pieces kind of just slipped neatly into place. I'm very excited. We've only been doing it now for a few days, but it's
already, and there are a lot of parts of this that have to be like done and considered very carefully for it all to work, including questions like what even is a work hour? How do you decide that? Like, what's a break that counts towards hours versus one that's like that doesn't, you know? And we had really long, interesting discussions about this that probably –
that was the hardest thing to figure out.
It probably warrants like a full-on, you know, article at some point. But
Or we could even explore it, you know, next episode, because it's a long discussion.
It's a lot. But I think we can give you the short outcome version, which was we concluded that as long as you had pre-decided chunks of time, like at least 2 hours, right? But probably two or three. And only had a small number of those, then and basically the idea was that during that chunk of time, you basically were making a commitment to the team, right? And saying, during that chunk of time, everything that I'm doing will be in the service of and biased towards work, right? Towards my obligations as a teammate. And so if I need to get a cup of coffee because like my brain's all over the place and I just need a second – that's part of your work day. Who gives a shit?
That's part of work.
Coffee, right? If you need to go on a quick run – you know, because like you're thinking and like you just need to move, right? And you go run, right? That's part of the workday because it's in that block of time that's in the service of
that.
It's
in service of that, yeah. It's sort of like
You're in work. Yeah, that was the we went around with this a bunch because it's like, what if I'm pacing for 20 minutes trying to think about a problem? And at the end of pacing, I have not come up with anything.
Or what if I hit a wall and then I just go lay in the grass?
If I just lay in the grass moaning, is that work? Am I working?
Yeah. Well, yeah. Or if your dog is annoying you because it wants to go outside, right? And so you take it for a walk, right? Well, you couldn't get any work done while it was annoying you, right? But also now on your walk, you're thinking about work stuff, right? So
is it work to walk a dog? Well,
yes.
In that scenario, yes.
Right.
But in other scenarios, maybe not, right? So
yeah. So we're trying to go with a simple heuristic where we didn't have to play this bullshit game of like, okay, start track hours.
And then what counts as work?
And so by having a clearly defined pre-committed time block wherein everything is in service of work, then now all of a sudden it's a good faith best effort, right? Because like you're going to get a phone call in the middle of that from your bank that you have to answer. It's like, no, don't make up that 10 minutes. Who gives a shit, right? But the point is like it's best effort to keep things constrained to that in that time span.
Yeah. And also in the as a final note about that, you know, people often talk about the idea of making up time, right? Of saying like, oh yeah, I missed a half hour here, so I'm going to make it up at the end of the day, right? We decided to fuck around with that because people do work extra sometimes, and we don't see like this is something companies always do, right? If you put in an extra like 2 hours on the weekend, the company doesn't come in and go, well, geez, you put in 2 extra hours. You can just work 2 less hours next week. It never goes the other way, right? So like, why would you have to make up a few, like an hour or a half hour that you missed on a day in a given week, if it doesn't go both ways.
Yeah. Yeah. As soon as you're trying to like keep track of hours and all that kind of stuff, then like it's just yeah. bad.
So it's like a good relationship, right? It's about trust and commitment. You just like, and this is when I'm going to try to help everybody and try to do my best to get a lot of work done.
And good faith.
I'm going to do whatever I can. Sometimes it's going to look weird, but yeah. I'm going to try. All right. So otherwise, industry news. Ludum Dare is coming up April 23rd. I'm going to be streaming. I don't really know what I'm going to do. I might make a game totally from scratch. I might use a prototype template and just whip something up. But either way, it's going to be some interesting conversation with the chat in the stream. I'll be just kind of
– Are you doing a whole weekend stream or like –
I'll probably do it in batches so that I can, be a person from time to time. So it'll probably be like a few hours here, a few hours there. So I'll probably put together a schedule and then plan that out. Plus I do have a WoW raid on Saturday, and you got a raid in the middle of a game jam. I won't stream that because my UI looks like a space shuttle. There's like 9,000 things happening all at once.
That sounds like you should be streaming it to show off your cool UI.
Too much.
I may. I'll think about it. We'll see what the viewers have to say.
It'll
about
be a weekend Seth streaming party. This is
me doing my thing this weekend. Come check it out. Just watch me in my element Truman Show style.
Yeah. So Twitch does let you just pre-schedule one-off events. So you definitely could put those up on there. So because then people can people can subscribe to that event and get an alert when it goes up. So I've been playing a lot with it since I did a stream a couple of days ago. Also,
yeah. Adam's been messing around with his Twitch setup. So now like sometimes he pops into a video call at work and he's like a tiny person in the corner of his screen with Coda.
Awesome. Yeah, I got this fucking cool green screen it's like a high quality thing that you pull up and it's got these like arms in the back that let it stop at any level. Actually I only pulled it down for this because for two part, because I'm having a lot of fun using it for, because I actually didn't get it for streaming specifically. I just got it because I'm like, I'm on camera for people every moment of the fucking day. And that's going to just continue because we're going to work from home forever. And so I was like, I want to get my setup to like feel awesome. I want it to feel awesome when I'm like on camera doing stuff. So I want to come into my workspace, and it's an AV workspace instead of a place where I code and then happen to be on camera, So that's my
– optimized for all parts of it.
Yeah, so that's my kind of overarching goal. So I got this green screen. I was like, oh, this would be cool, I was worried – I put it down because I was worried that it would actually bounce more sound off than my panels because it's – otherwise it goes up in front of my sound dampeners, But I've been having a blast. So every morning I just turn on OBS, but also that eats a lot of CPU. So I want to turn it off for this too to keep things quieter, keep those fans low. But yeah, just turn on OBS, turn on the virtual camera, put up my green screen. I got a cool – I made a background that's our box art for the podcast. I just kind of blur it out a bit, It's like
– Yeah, Adam's just looking professional as fuck in all these video calls.
I got good lighting now too. Like I got a light on top of my monitor that can light up my face, and I got this awesome – I noticed this because my wife thought she had decent lighting in her office, but it just always felt a little dark. So she bought these two LED just like standing lamps, that lit up the room so much. And it felt so much better. All of a sudden, she was like, I regret my whole life, like up until this point.
And so, I've been living in darkness, and now I've only seen the light.
It's amazing. So I actually just bought two of those. I put one of them up a couple nights ago. And like it's the difference, like good lighting, not just for video, which is a huge difference, but just for like your life experience in a space is really, really, really important.
It matters. It matters a lot. So if you're looking to beef up your work from home experience, maybe think about the fact that you actually are like a TV star now, and you're just on camera all the time.
Just all the time.
Get some dope equipment. All right, well, let's get on to some questions. All right, these questions come from our listeners over at podcast.bscotch.net. Not the highest question, but this was put to the top by our producer, so we got to read it. Mm. It's from Fly Hoppy Axe Rampa, who says, this needs to be the highest upvoted question by April 15th, but not before April 10th, so that Seth will be reminded when they record on the 16th that he said he would live stream his Ludum Dare dump, which starts on April 23rd.
Give the people what they want, Seth.
Yeah, I have to do this. That in my stream on Tuesday night also.
I have to do this.
When is Seth and Sam going to stream? They asked, and I said, Sam has never said anything about it, so I will make no commitments on his behalf. But Seth said he said he would.
Despite being the most extroverted of the three of us, Sam does not stream.
Mm-mm. Yeah. And also having the most fun voice and also the most interesting stuff to show people because art is, you know, is a lot more fun and easy to look at and has a larger breadth of an audience, you know.
I don't know. I mean, I think the last time I did, I was just so tired afterwards.
Yeah, but you got drugs now.
That's true. Yeah. Might have
been that. That's you should try it. It is very fun. Actually,
it's pretty fun. You just got to constrain it because I found that that if I did it for once you get past like 3 hours, it's a lot. Like two hours starts to feel like there's a wall there. Hmm. Especially I don't know if this is true for Sam. I know it's true for Adam and me. Our voices get hoarse very easily.
Oh yeah, like immediately.
Mm. So especially like, cause you're talking to, you're basically just self narrating, you know, the whole time you're doing it, like 2 hours of just talking for two. It's a lot. Yeah. Our next question comes from Akpop Hap Hop.
Akpop Hap. Before we get into it, we should say, since I was about to stream, if you want to watch Seth's stream or any of mine, go to, mm-hmm. Go to twitch.tv/bscotch and then subscribe so you can get those alerts and stuff.
Yeah, subscribe.
Subscribe.
We'll get in there. All right. Akpop Hap Hop says, mm-hmm. Do your new streaming screens set up for more game jam-like work days? Do you feel self-conscious when you goof off? Do you notice when the other person is taking a break? Do you acknowledge that you noticed? So this is like, we had talked in the past about how now we're doing a lot more of sort of the live co-working where we'll just be streaming screens, streaming video during the workday, even if we're not collaborating. How's that been? Like, is it feel weird to be watched?
No, it doesn't.
Because you opt into it. Yeah. You know what I mean? And like, and there's nobody's weird about, so the Discord has this great deafen button, right? Where you click it and not only are you muted, but you can't hear shit, which is like kind of, you think like, why would I want this? Like, why? And the reason is actually so you can just hang out on video without actually –
see what's going on.
So you could basically see two people are doing if you want.
Or even just know that like – because it makes you – look, when you're in that room and everyone's on a video, it makes you feel like you're part of like a – it makes you feel involved. It makes you feel like you're part of the team.
Yeah.
Even so if I'd say, can hear you and you can't hear anybody else.
Yeah, the co-working tables, there's usually just like two people in there. Maybe three throughout the day. And then sometimes it ends up being like five people for like an hour or so. But it really is, it's very, I think because of the opt-in nature of it. And because again, like our workplace isn't one where we're trying to make sure that you're doing stuff all the time, that it doesn't feel intrusive in any way. Cause you can just leave and no one gives a shit. Cause it's for you.
Or, you know, there'll be times where like, there'll be three or four people in there and suddenly maybe Adam and Sher start talking about something very specific to what they're working on today. And it's got nothing to do with me, really. And so I'll just be like, meh. And I just deafen myself and they can just carry on having their conversation. Mm-hmm. And it's pretty similar to, you know, in the office, we advocated for the idea of like having noise canceling headphones and having ways to basically mute your coworkers, right? Yeah. When you're in the same space as them, it's the same thing.
Yeah.
And there's nothing personal about it. It's not like, it's just that I don't need to hear this and I'm focused.
It's the same thing too, right? Where if you and somebody and like, so if you're in the group and there's a bunch of people in there, then you and one person start getting into a thing. Then like after a minute or two of it, when you realize it's a thing now, then just go to a different room, right?
Yeah. You just say, hold on. Yeah. I'll spin over to one of the conference rooms or whatever. So you just do that and then it's fine. It hasn't really produced any weird self-consciousness vibes. It's just kind of boosted the interpersonal layer of things.
Yeah. I think. Well, and there's that seeing the screen, you know, part of the question. And I can definitely see how that would freak people out, you know? It just, you know, like one of my main goals when I'm working, because I guess it's that being biased towards work. Things are the service of work, right? So if I'm going to take a mental break from work that doesn't involve me getting up, then the question is like, that's probably means I'm looking at something on the internet, right? Mm-hmm. So what is that going to be that like, I don't mind if other people see or whatever, right? And there's actually something about it that's kind of nice, that it helps you stay on task, right?
It's the panopticon.
It helps you not stray too far, right? And again, this is like, because I'm opting into it, because I can just stop screen sharing. Sometimes I do. Like if the thing I want to do is check my personal email, like, right, to like reduce some anxiety about something I might have to do, like,
yeah,
follow up with something.
Just turn off the screen share.
Then I turn off the screen share. When I go to my email.
Nobody cares.
Right? Yeah. Or if somebody has pinged me in Discord That's would be a personal thing, like my wife or something, right? And I'm like, oh, I should probably go, you know, catch up on that so I can make sure that's not a thing, right? Then the same deal. It's just like, oh, just turn off screen share for a second.
Go. Yeah, I think it's just the fact that it's up to you as to like how what you want to be sharing yeah. or not sharing, whatever else. So just
yeah, but otherwise, it's fun.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it just doesn't matter.
I do think though, because there are companies that when they've transitioned to work from home, they do require you to have your screen be viewable by your manager at any time.
Oh, Jesus Christ, know? No.
That's the worst.
I've read so many just like horror stories about the practices that some companies have implemented.
Yeah, well, it's a marker of distrust, right?
Yeah, because sometimes they'll even do a thing where your webcam needs to be on, your screen, you need to be running the software that would allow your supervisor to look through your webcam at any time and see that you're there and look at your screen at any time.
Some of them have eye tracking, so that way somebody doesn't have to come check on you, but they can just know.
They know if you're not looking at the right – like you might have a second laptop that you're watching YouTube on or something.
And if you're an employer doing that shit, knock that shit off.
What a tremendous waste. I mean the reality is that – so what you're getting there is performance actually from an – like I mean a literal performance.
Right. They're just making sure that see what they're doing.
You know, this is why like Twitch – so the difference between live streaming to me and what we do in the office is basically this, which is one is a performance.
Yeah.
One is someone just happens to be watching you doing stuff. There's a very big difference. And like any time you start – if you're an employer who's doing this stuff or if you're unfortunately involved with some people like this, I mean the amount of – because of what's happening is your mind is – spending a lot of energy trying to make sure that you are performing whatever that is expected the whole time. And like that will make you so fucking tired so quickly.
Well, and this goes right back to the whole like an hour is not an hour thing, right?
Because you're just nuking your people's time. Why?
Yeah. You're just throwing it away because it depends on the kind of work that's being done and all that kind of stuff, right? But what you're effectively doing is you're saying, I'm going to force every hour to be treated the same, right? And in fact, every moment of every hour to be treated the same. So – and now people have to behave that way too, right? Which actually means that now every one of their hours, in fact, moments is now worse by a huge margin because of the high mental and emotional cost of somebody not trusting you and watching your every move.
Yeah.
Right? Like that's fucked up.
It's fucked up
and it's counterproductive to a hilariously enormous degree.
But also like what's your job? If you're working at a company and you're working from home and now your boss is like, I need to be able to watch you, right? How could it possibly be the case that your boss can't tell if you're doing your job unless they're looking at you? Because the only job I can think of that requires somebody to be watching you to know if you're doing it is being like a TV actor or something, right? Because like your job is being watched. Like that's what you do. You're a performer, right? It really is just – it's changing people's measure – their KPIs, right? Like their performance indicators.
Yeah.
Now you're measuring their productivity by
– You're literally measuring their performance.
You know? Yeah, by whether you can see them and not by what they're doing.
I don't know. I think all this stuff makes me so mad because it's like – people are so much more powerful than machines when you stop treating them like machines. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
use machines for machine stuff.
Cut it out.
Yeah, that's a good fucking point, right? Because all these same companies are investing so little into automated tooling and into like actual robots and all this kind of stuff, right? And they just throw people at problems, then pay them as little as possible, and then try to make them behave as if they're robots. It's like, no, quit doing that. Get robots for robot stuff, and then you can now invest in people and have people do people stuff.
Jeez. I want to slap everyone. I'm just feeling that today.
It's just so stupid.
This pandemic has really brought some contrast out. And I mean, this is already happening, of course, all over the place to varying degrees. But
yeah, I think there's one kind of related point to this that it reminds me of, which is I've seen a lot of talk of people – not liking the whole having to be on video thing for calls and stuff. And so I think it's kind of interesting, this idea of like, you know, it's a person, they're at home, they don't want – it's a privacy concern of being like, oh, now people can just like see the stuff behind me. It's this whole stuff about like how appearances play into all kinds of things, right? And so now the way that people look suddenly feels like it has to matter because they have to be on video when there's an alternative of just being on voice. And so I think there's an interesting kind of – problem because there are a lot of real and important problems with that, like of like requiring that people be on video for certain things. But on the other hand, the absence of it, really dramatically changes the social experience of work. And so, and I think notably,
total amount of communication too. I mean, like you just don't get as much from not being able to see someone's face while they're talking.
No. And I think this is interesting is the places where I've seen people complain about this and sort of advocate for being allowed in essence to just like, just be on voice or whatever, are in these same kinds of places where you have these like fucked up workspaces that are not that, that try to basically say like, okay, you're a robot, you're at work. And where then home, you know, work life balance is interpreted to mean leave work at work, leave home at home, minimize hours at work. Right. And like, that's what that means. Right. As soon as you start trying to say like, well, work is actually a part of your life and you still want to separate concerns. And now you want to actually balance each in terms of where the hours are going so that everything is really good. And now you're trying to go to a workplace where it's a social experience, right? Now in that environment, that's the one where it feels like you need to have that. You need to have video, you know? And so I think it's kind of interesting because once you start playing these other like cultural problems and social problems and how they tie into this and how much of it is like, how much of it is feeding back on itself, you know, where it's like these real problems that are out there are just made worse when you have the kinds of workspaces that are out there. And what happens if you have better workspaces? Like, can those problems now mean something else, you know?
Or just go away. That's the wildest thing. Some process and structural changes will make it so certain things that seem like the biggest problem on the planet is literally not an issue anymore. I mean, I used to be bothered like always concerned with as a person who like, you know, ran the studio with how people dressed.
Yeah.
I could get like, if someone's wearing flip-flops or something, I'd be like, oh my God, no, flip-flops, no. Now I'm just like, I can't believe that I gave so much of a shit about that because good Lord, like it doesn't matter at all. But it did matter in that office context, like just the littlest bit, right?
And it did because of the interpretation of what it meant. Right. Yeah. But there's a follow on to that too, is like when you're in an office, like a shared office, or when you're going to a convention, right? Then now you and your team are also being judged according to a different set of standards.
It's performance again, actually. Right?
It's a performance, yeah. Mm-hmm. And so you have to be able to differentiate like when is it a performance and when is it not? And like, when does this thing mean what you say it means and when does it not and all this kind of stuff?
Yeah, you got to figure out what your costume is supposed to be. Am I pretending to be today?
Honestly, yes, truthfully.
Am I pretending to be a successful business person or a workout fiend? Am I pretending to be a very responsible employee? You know, whatever. Mm-hmm. What am I? Because everybody's just a person, really. We're just trying their best. Yeah. And nobody's one thing, you know. So you got to put on your costume and convince people.
Right, yeah. Well, and to this, that's the thing that's really fun about – but also horrible about running a business is trying to figure out how do you actually let people be people, you know, like how do you do that while also accomplishing whatever the business goals are, because those are treated as basically being mutually incompatible. And so you push in one place and, you know, pull in the other. And how do you find some scenario where it mostly actually just feels like everything is oriented in the same direction, you know? And we've tried a jillion ways to do that because that's always been the goal and everything has largely fallen flat, especially in the beginning. But it does feel like it's just getting better.
It's getting better. It's hard because these things kind of, you know, they pull in different directions and you got to find the common ground, I think.
Yep.
I'd love to keep going, but that's all the time we have for this week. So maybe we'll have to touch back on this later or see what people say.
Tell us your
questions.
Stories. Tell us your work from home stories and how things are organized. What's working for you or not working for you, you know?
Yeah. So we'd like to thank our producers, Fat Bard and Jen Koster, for putting the podcast together. And thanks to our community moderators who keep our Discord running. To get more involved in the Butterscotch community, go to podcast.bscotch.net. And like Adam said, go there. Tell us what your experience has been with this work from home stuff. We'd like to hear about it. Also over at podcast.bscotch.net, we have links to the community Discord, a way for you to donate, and links to the podcast archives. Thank you all for listening, and we'll see you next week.
Goodbye.
Bye.